right, welcome to Wherever You Are. I'm Ryan McNeil in Toronto, Canada. This is episode 91 of the Matinee Cast, something of an impromptu episode. If you're wondering to yourself what happened to episode 90, it's coming. It's in the can. It's posting next week. We're moving on to episode 91, so do with that what you will. My guest today is my blushing bride, Lindsay Rigoni. How are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
Not bad. How's the cat? I asked because Lindsay is sitting here like a James Bond villainess holding a fluffy black cat on her. That's too bad. We're here to talk about a film that's on Blu-ray DVD now and on demand and on iTunes and the like that I saw in theaters back in the spring and I made you watch for the first time last night. The film is Stoker. It's directed by Park Chan-wook. It stars Mia Wasikowska, Nicole Kidman, and Matthew Good. And it's basically just this one twisted family and what happens with them. A lot of people have seen it. If you haven't, go watch the trailer and come back to this, because I don't want to spend too much time talking about the plot. We're here to talk about it because I am aghast today and I just don't know what to do with myself. We watched this last night and you did not like it.
I really hated it. I'm sorry. I know everyone I know likes it. Everyone I know seems to love it, actually.
Well, yeah, because I put this up on Twitter about an hour ago and a lot of our friends were saying, like, no, what's going on? What's wrong? So I thought I'd give you the opportunity. I'm bringing our audience to the breakfast diner with us today. So when I saw this film back in the spring, I really loved it. Like, the story is not tremendously complicated. And anybody with half a brain can figure out most of it, I'd say.
Oh, you know from, like, the intro, you pretty much know most of the story. Are we spoiling? Does that matter?
Yeah, I'm going to preface this by saying we are going to fully spoil the holy heck out of Stoker. So if you haven't seen it, go watch it and then come back. But if you have seen it, listen in. You certainly know that something is afoot with the uncle.
The uncle might as well, when he shows up, might as well just have introduced himself and said, "Hi, I'm Charlie. I'm your uncle. I killed your father, and I'm going to fuck you." That's what he should have said, because that's what the movie told us when he introduced. They might as well have had, like, the dun-dun-dun, like, when he introduced himself, because they didn't hide it. It was edited in a way that it was clear, like, he always had that creepy face going on. And
I think that's just his face.
There was, like, no mystery whatsoever. Like, you knew immediately, like, oh, he killed the father. But then, you know, it takes a while. It's, like, supposed to be kind of a big reveal when you find out that he killed her. And then, like, the next day, they're like, where's the housekeeper? You're like, oh, wow, we already killed the housekeeper.
Well, I don't...
Like, you just know everything that's happened.
I don't know that we knew that he killed the father.
I knew that he killed the father immediately.
Well, no, but I think we knew that something was wrong with him. And certainly, yeah, like, the housekeeper and the aunt, when the aunt goes missing, well, because we see that, you kind of figure it's him.
Of course you do. And I love Jackie Weaver.
Right.
And she was completely wasted in this. Like, if you're going to have someone like her in the movie, like, don't kill her off so quickly. Let us get a little more time with her, for one. because I thought the other characters... Nicole Kidman was actually quite good. I'm not a huge fan of Nicole Kidman, but I actually really liked her in this. But I really thought the other two characters were very weak and predictable and undeveloped.
You're talking about Charlie and India
I just felt that their personalities just fit whatever the scene would be convenient. Like, they were... They acted however was convenient for the scene.
Right.
There was no follow-through with their character development. It was just, like, India was just, what do I need to be in this scene? It's like, I could feel the film was, like, you could feel the different filming days. It was like, oh, this is the kind of mood she was in this day when she was on set. Like, it just felt like...
But I sort of feel
completely
like...
Completely separated.
I sort of feel like a girl her age would be like that anyway. Like, a girl
they
her
would,
age... Like,
I didn't buy it. I felt her acting. I was aware of her acting. I was aware of every edit in the film. I was aware of the filmmaker's decisions for every, like, I mean, he did a lot of interesting things. There was a lot of really cool visuals. There was a lot of really cool cuts. But at some point, you've got to let that go and just tell the story. You can't constantly, like, if you're going to have this montage at the beginning with these interesting cuts,
right.
At some point, let that go. Like, you can't have that for the whole movie, because all I was aware of was the edits and the filmmaking process.
Right.
And I never stopped and thought about the story or the characters or the motivation. It was just, this is a film, I'm watching the filmmaker's thought process.
But I see,
he's like, I have this cool idea, let's do it 20 times.
Right. Maybe. But that's the thing, like, part of it for me, I thought the story worked well enough to do all these cool little tricks and whatnot. And you know, yeah, you can see it, but the thing is that he does it better than most. You know,
he does, but at the same time, it made me roll my eyes every time.
Why?
At some point, I should be able to just be lost in the story. Even with having, like, really interesting cuts and really interesting visuals, I should still be able to just watch the movie and not be aware of them.
But
I was more aware of the filmmaking process than I was of the story.
But I chalk that back up to the story not being a complicated story. Like you said, you figured it out within 5 minutes of where everything was going to go. And I think that, you know, most people with half a brain, that's exactly what happens. And it's just, okay, relax. Nothing here is going to shock me. It's just all, everything here is just basically an excuse to do these little tricks and get these pretty pictures and get these cool cuts and whatnot.
Well, then it should have been a short film because...
It is a short film.
Not literally a short.
This
would have been one of the most incredible 20-minute films ever if this had been 20 minutes. This could have been an amazing short film, but he only seemed to have enough tricks to last 20 minutes and then I just felt that they were used again and again and again and it just, after a point, it just made me roll my eyes and...
See, but
it was frustrating for me.
I found myself gravitating just towards the theme. Like, more the theme than the story of India coming of age. Because
I love coming of age movies, and you know that, but this was just like...
Jane Austen coming of age where they're looking for a hug.
No, but this was all just like...
You know, where they want Mr. Darcy to dance with them.
This was just so overdone.
But I like the metaphors. That's the thing. Like, I liked the whole... the spider crawling up the leg metaphor.
There were so many metaphors in this movie. It was nauseating.
Yes, like to be clear, we're talking about a film where a girl stands in a room and she is literally dripping from between her legs. Okay, I don't think you can get much more clear cut on a metaphor than that.
At that point, I was like, oh please! Like I felt like we'd been over metaphored at that point.
But
I was done.
I don't know. I liked that idea that they played around with it. The thing that I came to when I wrote about it back in the spring, which you would have known if you had read the post, was that India is at that moment where you get a girl who like dresses up in grown-up clothes, and for a while there's like, oh look, it's cute. She's wearing a beret or whatever it is that she's wearing that's grown-up clothes. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh wait, no, they're not dressing like a grown-up. Shoot, they're growing up.
Why was she 18 and on a school bus in high school when they kept making comments about how she's a straight-A student? Like, wouldn't she have been graduated?
No.
If she had just turned 18?
She's a senior. She's a high school senior.
Really? Because I graduated when I was 16.
Well, good for you. No, you did not.
You know, I stayed till I was 17 because I stayed for OAC, but I got my diploma when I was 16.
No, there's no way I believe that. I think you're misremembering.
You're not 18 in high school.
Yes, you are.
No.
Yes, you are.
No.
Yes.
Especially because she's supposed to be so super smart and she's like riding a school bus.
No,
and they're like clearly a millionaire family and she's riding the yellow bus to school.
Because they don't have a car to give her. That part's believable.
They had this sports car apparently sitting
in
the...
Would you let her drive that sports car?
Well, it was just like... And he even said this car was always your favorite. They clearly got lots of cars.
Well, yeah, but I think you're getting hung up on detail.
Oh, I know, but this movie was all about detail. Remember, this movie wasn't really about the overall story. It was about these little details that they just wanted to like...
You're nitpicking. But no, that was my whole point, was I liked
it. It was a cliche after a cliche after a cliche.
I didn't think so.
Those horrible bullies.
Okay,
that...
wait, before you get there, I will admit, the one part where I thought the film kind of lost its mojo is when they go to high school, because the rest of the movie takes place not in our world. Like, it takes place where a house like that exists, and you know, there's classic cars and dingy motels and everything like that. And aside from the use of a cell phone, it seems like it's not even set in this time. And then you go to the high school, and it's a modern high school. So I will admit that the whole... Anytime they went to the high school, I was... With the exception of the bus, I was thrown off.
And you had those cliched bullies that we would have seen in a movie 50 years ago that were overly mean and aggressive for no reason.
Because they exist, because that's what bullies do.
To someone who looks like her?
Sure.
Sure.
Yes. That whole it gets better thing, that's why. Because normal looking people get picked on because they're not... Like, she's normal, and she's nice, and she's pretty. But in comparison
to... She wasn't nice. She was kind of... Yeah,
She's nice enough.
No, she wasn't.
Sure she is.
No, she wasn't. Where was she nice? She was only nice when she was kind of being like creepy.
She's nice to her
family. I'm gonna murder you nice. No, she was not nice to her family.
She's not nice to her mom.
No, but we never even saw her with her father, and her father clearly thought she was a psychopath.
We saw her hunting, and her dad like nurtured that in her.
Yes, because they made it clear that the reason why her dad nurtured that in her is because this was a Dexter situation where the dad knew that she was a psychopath and he was trying to get her to let that out
do in a something bad to prevent doing something
worse.
Yeah,
she even says that right in the movie. I was like, right. Oh, this is Dexter. This whole movie was, you know, that anyone who's a fan of Dexter, Dexter is a great show. However, there's one episode, which I believe is in season 2 or 3. It's the worst episode of the entire series, and it's all, is it a lion or a tiger?
Lion.
It's a lion metaphor, and he keeps having these, like, metaphors, like, I'm like a lion, and I'm coming. I don't remember. There were these horrible, overly dramatic lion metaphors with this entire movie. It was, like, the kind of a Dexter plot about, you know, the psycho coming out and whatever, but all done with these really cliche, dramatic metaphors. There was no moment in this film where they lightened up or had any kind of really. It was just, they were really trying to create this tone, and it was so overdone. At some point, you just gotta let it go. And
I don't know, like, for me, it's kind of funny because you were talking about The Craft, and I just got lost in The Craft. I got lost in the look of this movie and the design of this movie, the tempo of this movie, certainly the sound of this movie.
See,
like, our stereo was getting a workout last night.
See, now I couldn't see past The Craft because I felt like they tried so hard, and it was, I could hear a,
but that's
a
not
filmmaker,
a bad thing.
I could hear a filmmaker in a room going, oh, it would be really cool, what if we did this? What if we did this? And what if we did this? And I never, there was so much of it, and yes, separated, it all looked good, but together, it was an overproduced film for me. It was just over-edited, over-scored, over everything.
No, I see, but that's the thing. I thought they actually kept everything relatively simple. It sort of reminded me of A Single Man. Remember when we watched A Single Man?
Yeah, I don't know.
The Colin Firth movie?
No, I remember it. I'm trying
Matthew
to
Good is in that too,
I don't
actually
know where you're going with this.
I'm going, it's the same sort of thing where it's very flashy, very, very stylized. You're hyper aware of every cut and every metaphor.
I thought that movie was very good, though. This movie, I just...
So but why didn't you like this one? Because they're very much cut from the same cloth.
Yeah, but not everything works all the time. And this movie, there was, like, no frame of this movie where I wasn't aware of the filmmaking process.
Okay.
Maybe it's because I'm an editor and I could...
You're going to play that card again?
I know, but I could see how hard they were trying with the edit. I could feel every edit, and I shouldn't feel the edits. After a certain point in a film, like maybe in the beginning, you're like, oh, I see they're using this new technique. After a while, you forget about it and you just get lost in the film. And that didn't happen with this. I was very aware of every edit. And if I'm aware of the edit, then it's probably not a great edit. As creative as it is, and as interesting as the edits are, I should not notice them. I shouldn't notice every cut in the film, and I did.
I don't know. It's hard because I feel, again, that something
felt choppy.
It didn't feel choppy. Actually, no. It felt quite fluid for me, and I really liked everybody's performance. I liked Mia Wasikowska's performance in it
and
a lot.
I actually really didn't. I felt it.
Do you generally like her stuff?
I do generally like her. I just
so what
I
was thought, she doing different this time?
I just thought there was no character here. I just thought it was uneven, and I felt that she was just.
But maybe that's because she's figuring out who she... Like, we're finding her in this little in-between space.
Yeah, but for me, that's not what it felt. It just felt like she was handed script pages out of order, and it was just like, oh, this scene you're going to be sort of friendly, and this scene you're going to... You're kind of an introvert, and you're not going to talk to anybody. And
I think that's being a teenager, isn't
it? But it didn't flow for me. It just felt like scene to scene, I could tell which scenes were shot on different days.
Is it because you never came of age sexually? Was that a problem you couldn't relate?
Yes, that's exactly it.
You've never jerked off in the shower to the thought of a murder?
I have. Well.
It depends on the day. No, I'm caught just so off guard. So, like...
I thought I would love it. Everyone was going on and on about this film.
Was it overhyped? Is that a problem? Did I just overhype it too much?
Generally...
Because I've been, like, jumping up and down since I bought that a week and a half ago.
Generally, I like what I like, and I don't like what I don't like. And it doesn't usually affect me whether people overhype it or not, because I know movies that people have all slammed and I've walked in and I love it. So that generally I don't think affects me that much. So, I mean, maybe it's a possibility it was overhyped, but I don't usually take that into account. I have my own opinions and I like what I like. I don't bow to peer pressure.
Wow. Now, the funny thing as well is you're working on a documentary right now that's all about autosensory, and...
I mean, I was very aware of that as
well.
Well,
that's why I thought that you would dig it, because there's a lot of play with sound in this movie, and it's sound of mundane things, like she's rolling the egg and cracking.
I did like the sound of rolling an egg, but at the same time, because I think there was a voiceover around that part that I thought was really melodramatic.
So. You can hear, like, when she's standing there and she's dripping, you can hear the water dripping.
And
she
walks around the
house. The pencil shaving. She's walking around the house and you can hear the metronome going in the background. It's kind of in time to her steps and kind of not. Even, like, at the end, like, is it my imagination or could you also hear, like, the blood running down the wall after the gunshot?
Yeah, you could.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, all of that. That's amazing.
The sound was very good in this, but the movie's more than sound.
But I thought that was the whole thing. Is like, everything is... You're hyper aware of everything when you're that age.
Well, I was hyper aware of the filmmaking process.
Maybe... But that's what I'm saying. Is that not perhaps deliberate that they want to evoke that kind of feeling?
Oh, no. It was incredibly deliberate, and I could feel what they were trying to do. And that's my problem, is
I just didn't want to feel. I don't like feeling. Feeling upsets you.
Okay, you know the one thing I hate in movies more than anything? Like, even a movie I love, there'll always be, you know, that scene where
when people don't spread butter over their bread proper?
Oh, that's a whole other thing. That's, okay. Like, my biggest pet peeve.
Sorry,
in movies.
What is
but
your
for people who don't know, let's just explain this for a second. Pay attention to this in movies. It's my biggest pet peeve. If there is a scene in a movie where somebody has toast... They don't take the time to spread. They'll always put jam on it or butter. But because, like, they're trying to keep the scene moving, they'll usually, like, take the knife, like, they'll take a big scoop of jam, and they'll go, like, one swish across, and it's all in the center, and it's, like, dry toast around. And then they walk off, and they're like, see ya, and they'll walk away eating the toast. And I'm always like, are you serious? It's just a little detail that bugs me. The worst is in Across the Universe.
Yeah, he just smears the butter down the middle.
He smears his butter down the middle, and it's a huge glob of butter, and it's just... like a glob in the middle, and then he walks away because clearly they're like, you only have this much time to butter your toast.
But what's the pet peeve that relates back to Stoker? It's fascinating.
Drug trip scenes.
In general. Okay.
In general, I hate drug trip scenes. I think they're just so overdone, and we've seen it a million times. So even in movies I love, there's always that scene where someone, or dream sequences, like every TV series, like even Sopranos has that one episode where he's like in a dream.
Mad Men does it every few.
Mad Men does it every time there's I just think it's a cop-out, and I hate that form of storytelling.
Okay.
And this film, even though it's not a drug trip, it was cut like it was a drug trip, like, the whole time. Like, that, because they're trying to make you feel closer.
Oh, the whole film?
The whole film. From beginning to end, they were trying to make you, they were trying to manipulate how you feel, which is fine. That's what you're supposed to do when you make a movie, is manipulate. I mean, every note of music that's played in a movie is a manipulation. They're trying, they play that music because they want you to make you feel something. But I felt the manipulation, and I could sense them trying to manipulate me, and because of that, I wasn't manipulated.
See, the only time I felt manipulated was during the scene where she's in the shower, because I felt like, we're trying to see that killing through her eyes and try to understand.
I hated that scene. Oh, God, I hated that scene.
Did you know where they were going with it the whole time?
Oh, of course. You knew from the beginning. You're like, oh, she's crying in the shower. At some point, she's going to start masturbating. Like, you know. You could see it was going to happen. And I didn't, because I don't know. I just...
Is that why you're in the shower so long? You cry, yeah. And then you... Okay.
Getting to know me.
Clearly. I don't know. There's so much to love about this movie. Matthew Good is amazing in this movie. Like, he really taps into that Anthony Perkins in Psycho, very creepy but very cold at the same time.
See, but no one I think I would prefer. I find it, like, creepier when someone's not creepy.
But he's not, like, creepy. Like, he's really charming.
I didn't know. I found, like...
You weren't, like, squealing with the girls when he was, like, at the car?
No, because they...
Come on, you come out of the high school, there's that hero shot of him leaning on the car.
He's just some... old dude standing outside of high school.
Not
they
that old. Well,
the,
but he's waiting. No, but he's
cops.
Waiting. Yeah. Well, yes.
No.
But
why was nobody calling the cops?
Because he would have said, "I'm waiting for my niece. My niece India goes here."
And nobody would have confronted her and asked her. I'm sorry.
And she would have said, "Yeah, that's my uncle."
In today's day and age, if there's some dude standing outside of high school with no children
and sunglasses on,
and sunglasses on, just leaning there day after day after day,
it's just one day.
No, it was no, because she came back another day.
Keeps going, yeah.
Somebody was
going
to call the cops. One of the teachers would have been like, "Who is this guy?" They would have approached him.
But he looks too good.
Okay,
that's what I'm saying. He would have talked his way out of anything. That's the thing. Like, and that's what makes him so twisted. Is that,
I like,
and that's
what,
and that's the same thing that makes, like, the Anthony Perkins Norman Bates character so screwed up. Is that they look so clean cut and so boy next door that it's like, holy crap, he's actually really screwed up.
But I felt like he played it too much like a psycho from the beginning. Even when he introduced himself, he had that look in his eyes, like, I'm a psychopath. I killed your father. Like, not like someone like Christoph Waltz in Inglourious Basterds, there's no look in his face like there's any, he just played it so nice, but there was something so innately scary about that performance. Do you know what I mean? Where here, it was just like he was always playing it like... It was too like, hello, Clarice. Like, every word out of his mouth was done in a way that it's like, I killed your father.
Wow. I don't know. I swear that there was, like, something happening on the left side of our living room that you were watching a different version of the movie or that you couldn't hear something or something like that because, you and I, our tastes, generally speaking, overlap really, really well.
I know people do think, like, we should clarify, people do think we have opposite tastes. And we do in terms of...
I don't think I could have married you if we did.
Yeah, but publicly, like, people do think we have nothing in common movie-wise.
Right, yes.
And in terms of... like guilty pleasures,
right?
It's true. Like yes. You, if I have a sick day, I like to watch really crappy '80s movies, and I enjoy them.
Yes.
You don't like those kind of '80s movies.
No,
but
I like The Rock.
You like watch The Rock. I mean, however, you'll also watch like Con Air. I would gladly sit and watch Con Air.
Okay.
We do have overlap, but in terms of movies that are just this is a movie that's a good movie,
right,
or a classic movie, or we generally like the same things.
Yes.
It's rare that we, if a movie is truly good, that one of us likes it and the other doesn't.
Right.
I know I have a reputation for liking really bad films. And yes, I do like really bad films, but I also like really good films. So, but yes, our tastes are generally similar. In this particular case, I hated this movie and you love this movie, and that's fine. We have different opinions. I see what you like in the movie. And I see what other people like in the movie, and I see it. I see those elements. For me, as a whole, I couldn't enjoy this film. I'm too hyper aware of the filmmaking process. Maybe it's because I work in the industry and I couldn't see past it. But
no, but I don't think that's it.
But that shouldn't matter.
No,
that shouldn't matter.
A
well-made movie, I shouldn't notice.
Again,
that.
Yeah, and again, I come back to A Single Man, which is very much the same sort of idea, and you went with that.
Yes, and sometimes it works. Like. Even like an actress performance, if they give a performance in one movie and they give a similar performance in another, it could work one time and it could not work another time. It's same thing with editing techniques or style. It doesn't, just because I like a style, it doesn't mean I'm always going to like it, especially if it's overused in something like this. Sometimes you just need to let the story breathe a little bit, and in this film
So the score in this movie did nothing for you?
I don't remember the score.
It's all very lovely piano-based... very, very wandering kind of thing. That duet that they plays.
Now that duet, that was absolutely stunning.
But wait a second,
that's
also like hypersexual and hypercharged and hyper, metaphoric.
It was. I didn't know I'm saying the musically.
Oh,
it's beautiful.
The scene, not so.
The
much.
Scene, I was like, oh, I was rolling my eyes. And now the reason why I possibly don't remember the score is because just 48 hours ago, I went and saw Stripes in the theater, and that's got like one of the best scores of all time.
But this has a much better score than
so,
Stripes.
No, it doesn't.
Yes,
Stripes
it does.
Is like one of the best scores ever.
I disagree. I'm aghast. I would tell you to watch it again. But you just did.
No, I'm not gonna.
We own it, so I'm hopeful. Like, I'm hopeful one day you're flipping channels and you come across it and you're like, hey, you know what I really liked tonight?
But surprisingly, I really liked Nicole Kidman in this. And
which, now, if anything, that blows my mind because you hate that woman with the fire of a thousand suns. Yes, you do.
When do I hate Nicole Kidman?
When was the last time you liked a Nicole Kidman movie? Moulin Rouge?
Well, I don't watch a lot of Nicole Kidman movies.
Well, there's
but
that.
When have I ever not liked Nicole Kidman?
I don't know. It seems like she's
a
woman.
No, she's not someone I wouldn't list her as, like, one of my favorite actresses.
Right.
I don't think she's the greatest. She doesn't always do movies that I like, but she's not Keira Knightley. Like,
okay.
I don't dislike her.
Okay.
I don't actively dislike her.
But you liked her in this. And then,
I did like her in this. Now, normally, especially recently, I find it a little hard with her because, like, the plastic face thing, and she can't emote the way I would like an actress to be able to emote. And this movie was a little distracting because, you know, she clearly had a recent lip injection before she filmed this, so it's a little distracting.
I think that's a little petty.
No, it is. It's totally petty. No, but as... when
but that's me!
No, when someone's job is as a performer, and most of acting, even if there's no dialogue, it happens in your face. It's about those little expressions that you can make with your face, and unfortunately, she's done things to herself recently where she can't do that.
So this fall, when she plays Grace Kelly, am I seeing that by myself?
No, it looks like her face is a little more movable in this. And I kind of bought the plastic surgery thing because of the type of character she was playing. She was playing like...
somebody very
obviously
vain.
Like a wealthy...
vain.
Vain mother who clearly does nothing with her time, but...
Hang out
and do
fawn
her
over
whatever.
Her brother-in-law.
So, yeah, so it worked.
And ignore her daughter.
And I liked that she still kind of had that, like... clearly she was a shitty mother because... the daughter hates her so much, but at the same time you could see her trying, and her character was a little more nuanced, and there was shed depth a little more than I felt the other two characters
so,
had.
So, like, you like, for instance, her final speech? Because that's kind of the one of the, as much as I love the movie, that is one of the hammier moments.
Oh, it's
in
a
the
total
whole movie.
Hammy moment.
But it's awesome.
However, I mean, she had a shitty daughter. I'm sorry. Like,
I don't
when
know.
She's like, I just want to watch the world tear you apart, I was like, yeah. I get it.
So then, okay, maybe if, like, maybe that's it. Like, maybe if you liked Mia more, if you liked the India, like, whoever was playing India more, you might like this movie a little bit more. Or was it just, you were still
possibly.
Done from the craft?
And the thing is, I don't think I've ever disliked that act. What's her name?
Mia Wasikowska?
Yeah. I don't think I've ever
she's
disliked
Alice,
her before.
Alice
yeah,
Wonderland.
I've
and,
never disliked her before. I don't.
The Kids Are All Right. That's her as well.
Yeah, and I think she's very good in both those movies. I have no problems with her as an actress. I just didn't like her performance in this film.
Oh, man.
I just thought it wasn't doing it for me. And part of it's the melodramatic voiceover, and this, that has nothing to do with her. That's
but it's complete melodrama,
this,
right?
And it was just...
It's American Gothic melodrama right from the get-go, and I think that's the thing. That voiceover, that opening voiceover, that I hear things that people don't, I'm standing here in my mother's blouse and my father's belt, that's completely telling you what you're in for. You are screwing around with your phone during that opening part. And
oh,
part
no,
of me,
I saw
part,
the opening
I know
part.
You saw it, but part of me wonders if you were just, you know, you couldn't quite settle in, and that's what threw you off the rest of the way.
No.
No?
No.
I don't know. The one thing I kind of want to end this off with, and maybe people will know, we were talking about this before, is I really like Park Chan-wook's use of the red and yellow over and over and over again. I have no idea what they mean. The red, of course, is easy to figure out. The yellow, I don't know. But
could just be looks good on camera. You don't know. Like
no, there's got to be something to it. Like for it to be that omnipresent, where it's the colors that she's drawing, and it's the colors of the ice cream cartons, and it's the color of the neon sign at the diner. They're chosen for a reason. The red, it makes perfect sense. The yellow, I don't know. So what the yellow is supposed to signify, like the yellow in her pencil and it's got the red blood, I don't know. So if somebody could tell me what the hell the yellow is supposed to be all about, I'd love to know. But yeah, I had to capture this moment where we divided so fiercely on something I swore you were going to dig.
Yeah, I know I'm probably, like, half of our friends are going to hate me for this, but I really hated the film.
Well, it happens, and you know, that's your case, and if you ever feel differently, it's on the shelf. Feel free to drift over to the right-hand side.
But, I mean, because, you know, the
it's
opposite,
right there in between Super 8 and Thor.
The opposite sometimes happens, too, because, like, when I saw, it was last year when I went and saw Midnight in Paris, I generally am not a Woody Allen fan. I don't love Woody Allen movies, and
right.
I just went, I forget why I went, like, I was by myself, and I think it was the most convenient starting time. Like, it was going to start in 5 minutes, so I was like, oh, I'll go see this stupid Woody Allen movie. And it was, like, one of my favorites of the year. And it's not one movie I had expected to like.
Yeah.
And this movie I went in expecting to like.
Wow.
And I just... hate it.
I'll be
but
damned.
Whatever.
Well,
it's fine. I get why people like it. It's just my opinion, so don't hate on me.
That's our shortened episode 91 of the Matinee Cast. Episode 90 will be coming up next week on July 29th. We'll be talking about Only God Forgives. You can leave comments about Stoker either on this post. You can tweet at me at matinee_CA. And if people want to tell you that they agree with you or that they disagree with you, where can they find you?
They can find me at Lindsay Ragone. LindsayRagone.
There we go. Well, for Lindsay, I'm Ryan, and I'm right. We'll see you at the matinee.